committed to spreading illness to others.
Hello.
That's what it's all about.
That's dedication. Try to infect others even when I barely have the energy to stand. It is 38 seconds after the hour of 12. I can already tell it's going to be one of those days. There's nothing like hearing Tim Riley use the phrase, go rummage through a dumpster. Mere moments before you go on the air to make you lose your composure.
You can tell it's going to be a good day because Teen Wolf 2 is on tonight.
That is the harbinger of all things fantastic.
With Jason Bateman and Kim Darby.
Okay, there you go. Fantastic. Okay, Emerson, let's keep it together. 3 more hours, then you don't have to talk at all. All right, it is 1 minute 14 seconds after the hour 12, and this, the month of August of the year of our Lord 2006. Sarah Dillon, could you sweeten my microphone, please?
I sure could, Rick.
Why, thank you so much.
Is that enough, Rick, for you?
It's all relative, one supposes. We are here at the plushly pointed yet not overly ostentatious studios of AM 970 Solid State Radio in beautiful downtown Portland, Oregon. Thank you for coming by. It's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. I'm sorry, but Sarah, I've been apologizing all morning here because I know I said this yesterday, and it turned out to be egregiously, woefully incorrect. But I do believe that I've turned a corner on this thing. I do believe that, just like that guy in The Price is Right that hops up the little mountain and then he falls and whatever, I'm over the top. I'm over the hump. Because by the end of yesterday's program, I mean, you could smell the ashes coming out of my voice yesterday. By the end of yesterday's program, it was an ugly situation in here. I sounded like Roger Waters on a bad day. Today, though, I do feel better. I feel like my head is a little bit better, a little clearer, not quite as congested, a little more power, able to project a little more fully. But, of course, and I don't mean to gross everybody out by talking about phlegm, right here at the beginning of the show. Although I do believe it was Tim Riley who was talking about Aztecs gnawing on the bones of babies.
That was yesterday.
Right. I'm just saying, it's not like it's unheard of to present some sort of untoward material during this section of the broadcast.
It was historically accurate.
Well, so is this. I've been hacking up phlegm. You can't get more accurate than that. Mucus. In my body. It's a fact. A scientific fact. It's the bittersweet thing to where you know you're getting over the head cold. Because this happens to me once every 18 months or so. I'll get the bad head cold. You get the retaining of the mucus and so forth. The good news is that you know that, as I said, you've turned the corner. You know that the worst is over and you're coming out of the tunnel. The bad news is you know that that's happening because all of the phlegm that has stored itself in your head just starts to come out. Starts to come out like Ghostbusters 2, The Secret of the Ooze. No, that's not Secret of the Ooze, isn't it? Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2, that's The Secret of the Ooze. Ghostbusters 2, there was ooze, though. There were sewers full of ooze. That's kind of what my head is right now.
We're just kind of sitting back listening.
My head is either like Ghostbusters 2 or Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 3. One of the two. Anyway, so, but I apologized to Sarah and Tim right before the show today. I said,
don't mention it.
I said, I apologize for all my hideous coughing. I don't want to be gross. And, you know, I don't want to be the guy sitting around. You know, it's like if you know anybody who smokes really badly, not that we know anybody like that. But if some of you at home, maybe you work with someone, not that we do. So it's just, I'm just postulating. But if you work with somebody who smokes, but my dad was like this. My dad was like a 4-pack a day guy. And you know the cough. You know the horrible, hideous, terrible smoker's cough. And I don't ever want to be that guy because it's so gross to listen to. So I duck out into the hallway right before the show and really just a horrible, just sort of a, just a terrible, spitting right into a wastebasket just in time to look up General Manager Mark Whalen right there, who's intimidating in about 6 different ways. He's like 40 feet tall. It looks like a wall could fire us all. So anyway.
At least you feel better.
So there you go. And I look up, and this is right after hacking into a wastebasket. I look up, and there's Mark going, hey, Rick, how's it going? And there's just no, there's really no response there. except just to say I'm sorry. You made a terrible mistake by hiring us. I'll go incinerate myself now. All right, it's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. You can also email if you like. It's rick@rickemerson.com. Whole bunch of stuff to get to today. Exciting things, kids. And I don't normally mean that in the way that, you know, usually that's just said to cover the fact that it's the same lackluster crap as always. Today, actually exciting things that we'll be getting to, including but not limited to. Well, before we do that, let me welcome now to the, do I have the mailman sounder? No, I've put it somewhere. I'm sorry, that's all me failing to plan and planning to fail. All right, let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson Show.
The postman is the person in your neighborhood.
Thank you. Official stenographer of the Rick Emerson Show, mailman Chris. How are you, sir?
I am doing well.
All right. Thank you. Thank you for rubbing it in. I have here the following items that I'm going to get to. We are going to get to, it's not just a regular penis watch. It is a double penis watch.
In more ways than one.
Yes, I mean that in every conceivable way. We have a religious nutcase watch. Today we will do the top five. Because not only is it rock star related, sort of, but it does have to do with one's throat health. So today, top five rock and roll screams, none of which I would be capable of emulating today. Top five rock and roll screams. Scott Dadley will be here from FilmFeverRadio.com. What is that? Is it Beer Fest? Beer Camp? What is that movie that's coming out? From the Super Troopers
Beer guys? Fest. Yes,
Beer
Fest. It's based on Oktoberfest, isn't it?
I guess.
I don't care because Hollywoodland starts next week.
Ah, man, I've heard such bad reviews of that film, though.
Oh, really? I heard that it was totally revamping Ben Affleck's career.
I hope so, because I like Ben Affleck. Do we all like Ben Affleck here, personally?
Yeah, kind of, yeah, I guess so.
I'm just saying, he seems like a good Joe.
I didn't like him in Jersey Girl.
Well, but you didn't like Jersey Girl. That's
true.
The difference. But you liked him, though, probably. Like George Carlin in Jersey Girl. You probably liked him even if you didn't like the movie.
Actually, the movie meant so little to me that I don't even remember it anymore.
See, we should just agree
all
not
movies
to talk
are
about
like
that.
That
all movies are crap. Everything is awful. End it now. There's that snort again. We'll talk to Scott Dadley about Beer Fest. The thing about Hollywoodland is that
the title is going to kill it.
I was telling Scott that they got to pick a better title because it's about George Reeves and Superman curse. I want it so badly to be a good film, and I fear that it's going to be like Autofocus. Mm-hmm. See Autofocus? Bob Crane. That surprises me that you didn't see that.
No, I keep putting it off, and then I forget about it.
You know, the thing about Autofocus is, not a bad film, not a great film, decent. You know what Autofocus was? Autofocus is the story of Bob Crane, of Hogan's Heroes fan, who was famous and then was bludgeoned to death and shot a lot of homemade porn. The thing about Autofocus is Autofocus was like a solidly made, done-for-HBO film.
An after-school special.
I'm saying a made-for-HBO film. Films that HBO makes in-house are not bad. They're pretty good.
Yeah.
Like that Live from Baghdad film, which I gave Sarah to watch, which she undoubtedly hasn't. It's a solid film. Nothing wrong with it. Probably not going to do too well in the theaters. Not that good. Not a movie of the week, though. It's a solidly made film. That's what Autofocus is. Unremarkable, but good. I suspect that Hollywoodland is going to be very much like that. That's my fear. That's all I'm saying.
And then the Black Dahlia is coming up, too.
The Black Dahlia. I'm all over that. The Black Dahlia and then that David Fincher Zodiac film, which the Zodiac Killer is one of my favorite serial killers. So also opening today, and if you have chillins, I may want to know about this. How to Eat Fried Worms, I believe, opens today, which is one of my favorite children's books. Do we all read that as children?
I did not, no.
Great,
I think
but.
So.
How to Eat Fried Worms is great. It's a kid that has to eat, I believe, 50 worms in 50 days.
Is somebody on the phone?
Oh, hello, Chris. I forgot you were there. Let's see. So Scott Dally's going to be here, and Tim Ryder will give you money-saving tips if you have been recently downsized by your employer. So there you go. We're not over-promising today. We're going to under-promise, over-deliver.
All right, so we've got a double penis watch, the religious nutcase watch, top five rock and roll screens, Scott Dadley, and money-saving tips.
That is exactly what we're going to do today, sir, and at the end of the program, we'll tally up what I've got and what I've not.
Okay, you're at 14-9.
All right, thank you. Thank you very much. There you go. That's mailman Chris. Fantastic. All right, we're joined today, as are we always, by the lovely, intelligent Sarah X. Dillon. How are you today?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
Oh, you know, just me and the phlegm.
I think my roommates hate me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Your roommates are kind of creepy, though, so
no,
it's a
No, you
net...
were right. I don't think I'm meant to live with other people.
No, I could have told you
I got
that.
Yelled at yesterday, and then my mom told me I have to start vacuuming and cleaning the bathroom.
Vacuuming the bathroom or just vacuuming?
Vacuuming the whole house, and all he has is...
Why?
One of those... I don't know.
I thought it's his house. Make him vacuum.
It is. I know. Well, he called me, and he's like, you know, we're all doing our part, Sarah, so we need you to vacuum the house and clean the bathroom. It was really weird. I don't think he likes me anymore.
Now, when you pay, do you pay? Does that include utilities?
Yes.
It seems like that ought to be included.
See, I was just taken a little off guard because you really did kind of seem kind of angry.
Do you create a lot of mess in the house?
I really don't.
You are kind of a filthy person, and I mean that in the best way.
I know, but I am, and I clean up after myself. The only way I'm filthy is, like, I leave my movies out in the living room, so I, like, stripped it of everything that's mine.
Let's not overlook your kitchen habits.
Well, we have a dishwasher.
All right, so you don't...
And you see me, I buy basically all the food I eat. I don't cook.
So you don't get that Sarah Dillon, Rick Emerson stink going on in the kitchen?
No, not anymore.
Not since you live with... But you're not made to live with people.
No, and I can tell, and I think that he doesn't want to live with me anymore.
Well, I only say this because I love you, Sarah, but I think that might be best for everyone.
I know.
Did you ever watch the show 30-something?
No.
There was a character, she was played by Melanie Myron. Her name was Melissa, I believe. And she was sort of the, don't take this the wrong way, please. She was sort of the spinster aunt. Now, she had gentlemen friends, men who, as they say in Murphy's Romance, came for dinner, stayed for breakfast. But who did not live with her or engage in any other sort of domestic activities with her. She just had a dog and a lot of big, chunky-looking earrings. And
that is me.
It really is you. And her hair was dyed all manner of wacky colors. And she lived in sort of an arty loft and painted things.
Well, what's frustrating is that, you know, when I moved in, I told her, I'm like, I don't cook. I like kind of keeping to myself in my own space. And now, like... I think it's making him mad that, you know, I don't cook, and I like staying
See,
in my own space.
You know what Manuel is? And he seems like a good guy.
I believe it's called machismo.
He... Yes. Your house is like a little mini Survivor right now. the Manuel tribe seems to be very irritated. What was I saying? No, here's the thing. You know what? Manuel seems...
Well adjusted.
Well, no. He seems like a...
Fair.
He seems like a solidly made HBO movie kind of guy. No, but here's the thing about Manuel. Manuel, clearly, he did the girl thing, where you told him straight up, if you're to be believed, which you are, what kind of person you were when you moved in together, and now he's disappointed that you are that person. Because you told him, you're like, I don't do anything. I don't clean. I kind of just sit around and... pick my toenails and fall asleep.
Like,
and
I really
don't
enjoy like potluck dinners or
I don't want to be
like,
friends.
Gardening. I don't want to do that.
I don't want to hang out. I don't want to be social. You're like that guy in Glengarry Glen Ross. I don't want to buy land. I don't want to invest. I have nothing.
I like him. I mean, I like being social with him. It was better than when he was ignoring me and asking me to vacuum.
I'm just saying you want to live on your own. That's all I'm saying. And I only say that because...
Like a Mary Tyler Moore type of situation.
You really are. See, that's the thing is, what's wrong with being independent? What's wrong with being a strong, independent Mary Tyler Moore?
I just hate paying my bills so much, and it's nice to just write one check.
It's nice to have a man around to pay those for me.
Or anyone. I would pay somebody to just do my bills for me.
When you say do your bills, you mean calculate and tally?
Fill out checks?
No, just like write the checks and put the stamp on
it. You mean actually pay?
I am that lazy, yeah.
No, but when I say pay, I fear we're getting dangerously off track here just in the opening, but are you saying that you want somebody to financially support you, or are you saying...
No, I'll pay for it.
It's the actual logistic paying of the bills.
The logistic paying of the bills.
Because that's my thing, too.
Yeah, I
have the money, but they'll just sit there by the microwave.
Mm-hmm. I totally have a phobia of my bills.
I've had my power turned off in the past, even though I had the money, because the bills just stacked up by the toaster oven, and I would come home, and I'm like... Well, I should send those envelopes, but I'd rather watch porn.
See, you know, I do the thing where I ignore all my mail, and then I find the 800 number for the company.
Me too.
And I'm like, I don't know what you're talking about.
I never got any bills.
So then I'll just pay it all with credit card over the phone, and then poof, it's done.
That's exactly what I do. I will let it tally and... See, I would do with bills exactly what I do with relationships. Just ignore every warning sign, ignore every demand, until it reaches the, I am moving out! And then finally, baby, I didn't know, baby. I've been working so hard. I didn't understand you were feeling neglected. And then it's like and then one big dinner takes care of the whole thing. You know what I'm talking about? One fancy date. And it all is forgotten. So I would do with the power company. All right, dear Mr. Emerson, this is your 15th warning. Me, into the trash. You know, or just under a pile of crap. And then they'll turn the power off, and I'll call up and go, hello, I came home with my powers. I believe there's some sort of a, And they'll go, we have sent you 15 warnings.
Like, do you have the, what address do you have?
Yeah, what, are you sending that to number B? No, you can't, that appeared, there's a clerical error, I'm afraid. I was shocked and appalled that my power was, can I just take care of that over the phone? I don't wish to be an imposition. I'll avoid my Verizon bill for months,
and then I'll just pay it all in one big chunk.
You're the worst people.
I know. Well, I'm glad that you're like that, too.
No, but see, that's the thing is, but of course, that's the irony is that you...
I was honest.
And see, here's the thing, as you may, Sarah and I have what some people might call a tempestuous relationship. Sarah and I will get along really great, and then we'll have days where we don't get along really great. But you know, the irony is, it's because we have so many character traits. And that of course, is why, well, never mind. Now, that is really going to put us off field if I make that observation. I'm just going to say that you and I and other people, like Nate is another one of like this, to some extent, Clyde falls into this category. People who just really never, ever, ever should live with other people. Maybe Nate's an exception. I don't know.
Mm-mm.
Nate lives with people, and that seems to work out, sort of.
With people that he can, like, lord. He likes to be the master
dominate.
Of the house. No, he loves living in his house because he's, you know, in charge of everything.
Okay. Shame Nate.
And that's why we did not work out living together.
He's got a portcullis and a moat.
Yeah.
All right. Stay a while. Stay forever. Here's Tim Riley working on the following stories.
Well, nobody will have the chance to get their hands on John Carr while in jail. A Little Dipper Iraqi girl will be flown to the U.S. for an operation so she may hear the sounds of democracy in her country. The owner of a Florida landscape business dies after being buried in moat. One's enough, thank you. A man with two penises wishes to downsize.
Okay. Oh, I was going to talk about a bunch of crap, but...
Well, we got 3 hours, and starting next week, 4.
This is why we need 4 hours, by the way, so Sarah and I can sit and talk about laundry and not paying our bills.
And why people hate us.
And why people hate us. All right, let's see. Let's go to the city desk. We've got Max and John. People already on hold for some not altogether definable reason. Later on, CNN radio correspondents Jim Roop and Bob Costantini. You stay right there. Here's Tim Riley, ladies and gentlemen, at the Ministry of Truth. Why? There you go. We'll call that good. That's strange.
Yeah.
Well, what can you do? All right, here's Tim Riley, ladies and gentlemen.
Well, from my top to bottom of the coin tower downtown Portland, Oregon, CBS presents the Ministry of Truth. Northwest Airlines flight attendants are waiting to find out if a federal appeals court will issue an injunction against their planned strike action. Union spokesman Ricky Thornton says almost half the members were ready to return to work after Northwest's second contract offer.
Oh, I'm sorry. Is it sound?
Yes, it
that's
is.
My fault. Here we go.
And that's been a very difficult piece because this particular contract was voted down by 55%, so it was a very close margin. But there is still a strike authorization vote in place that came in at 85% if we didn't come up with a contract that was acceptable to the group.
What kind of a weird accent is that? Is he Canadian?
He might be.
That sounds a little Canadian. And this is what airline?
This is Northwest.
All right.
It is the sixth largest air carrier flying into PDX.
Northwest is a real airline? Northwest isn't one of those airlines that they make up for, like, the snakes on a plane?
No, that's the one that Lewis and Clark fly on, I think.
Northwest?
Yeah.
All right.
And that's been a very
Clark
difficult
and Lewis.
Piece because this particular contract was voted down by 55%, so it was a very close margin. But there is still a strike authorization vote in place that came in at 85% if we didn't come up with a contract that was acceptable to the group.
Who does he sound like? He sounds...
Somebody on NPR.
There's
sounds like Wally Cox.
There's some character I just saw in a movie the other day, and he sounds a lot like that. He's, you know, he's sort of a stereotypical snooty front desk clerk kind of a guy.
Nothing
you know?
Wrong with that?
No, I thought they had Miss Hewitt's room, but now I think no. One of those guys. The guy that's always in like a Beverly Hills Cop film, and like Eddie Murphy's the rough and tumble guy in from out of town, and it's like he constantly has to interact with like the snooty sort of flamey guy at the front desk who's all like, "And shall I have a bubble bath sent up for sir?" All right. Well, there you go. And so they're firing people.
Yes, well, they're laying off people, too. As a matter of fact, Northwest Airlines brass gave workers a laying-off booklet offering 101 ways to save money. And here are some of them.
We have the list. Mm-hmm. Of 101 ways. Now, this is the thing is, this is actually not a joke. Oh, is this Bob Costantini? All right. Well, I'll tell you what. Let's do this, because this Northwest, yes. They gave out this one. What is it titled?
101 Ways to Save Money.
And it sounds like a kooky thing that we have made up. It sounds like a thing that's been fabricated. But not, it's real. I mean, it's an actual list of suggestions they gave their employees to save money now that they've all been sacked. So let's set that aside.
I'm going to put it over here to the left.
All right. Just make sure that we'll get to that here in just a few. All right. Ladies and gentlemen, let's welcome to the Rick Emerson Show from the Hill. CNN radio correspondent Bob Costantini. How are you, sir?
All right. You make me sound so magnanimous.
That
music.
I'm Bob. You're a professional working for one of the most esteemed news gathering organizations on the globe. Why would you deserve anything less? Bob, we really have to talk about the fact that you have such a negative self-image.
No. I have no negative self-image. I just feel like I should be wearing robes or something and, walk in regally.
Well, that's the spirit. Maybe swinging one of those big incense things that the Catholics use. All right. Hey, let me ask you this.
Sure.
I don't have a specific question about today's news so much as I have an overarching question. And
right.
That is this. I'm looking at this CNN radio prep sheet. Now, let me ask you this, sidetrack for just a moment. Is this CNN radio prep sheet that we get every day, is this prepared by Laura Caviezel or by some sort of flack?
No, it's... Laura usually prepares it. But Laura is on the morning shift today. I was on the morning shift today. And so there is someone else filling in.
Now, when you say prepare, on a normal day, does that mean that Laura Caviezel writes it? Or is prepare code for she makes an intern do it and puts her name at the top?
No, I believe that she writes it, although I've never seen it being done in Atlanta. But I believe she writes it and tries to, as always, try to gin up some interest in news of the day and what reporters will be able to talk about.
All right. Well, that's just really more of a side question. I was just sort of curious. So I'm looking at this today. There's U.S. and Syria, where it says, the description says, U.S. is warning Syria to abide by U.N. arms embargo meant to stop Hezbollah from resupplying, blah, 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 blah. Which, by the way, does that indicate that really the only reason Hezbollah agreed to the ceasefire is because they ran out of stuff to throw at Israel?
It didn't seem that way.
I mean, when it says... meant to stop Hezbollah from resupplying after its month-long war. It makes you wonder if they just sort of we kind of used everything up anyway. We might as well stop. And then right below that, the Bush administration said Thursday it's working with its allies to find a diplomatic solution to a nuclear standoff. Now, my question to you, Bob Costantini, is to what extent is it related that all of this stuff is happening at the same time? And because right below that is Palestinian officials on Thursday denounced a militant group that had demanded the release of all Muslims and kidnapped the Fox journalist. So, like, this business of UN, of the U.S. and Iran and this nuclear weapon, to what extent does Iran look around and Iran sees something like the Hezbollah-Israel situation, or Iran looks around and sees the ongoing situation in Iraq, or Afghanistan, says, you know what, this would be a good time just to stir things up. Let's get some nuclear weapons. Is that sort of just happenstance? Or does Iran deliberately decide that this is the best/worst time to do something like that?
There's a lot of question in there. But it is largely all interrelated. Iran is also considered to be a supplier of weapons and money, in particular to Hezbollah. And the United States would like to bring Iran to heel a bit about on that, but they're at first trying to get Iran to stop its nuclear uranium enrichment that could possibly lead to a nuclear weapon being in Iran's hands. And they also feel that Washington feels it has a better chance of at least getting Syria some pressure on Syria. We do have some diplomatic contacts with the Syrians versus Iran, where we don't. We might be able to put some pressure on Syria to not resupply Hezbollah so much. The first question you asked, it didn't seem to me that Hezbollah was running out of weapons. In particular, you may recall that in the few days leading up to the agreed-to ceasefire, there was heavy, heavy fighting. A lot of rocket attacks coming from Hezbollah, a lot of responses by Israel.
So and, let me ask you this. Are we currently sanctioning Iran in some fashion right now? Are we already engaged in sanctions? Because that's always the first thing that they threaten. We will engage in sanctions, economic and otherwise.
But the U.S. has its own sanctions on Iran.
So then,
by and large, to prevent any kind of weaponry from being made there.
Well, that's clearly not.
But it's indirect because we don't even have diplomatic relations generally with Iran.
It's not really having the desired effect, though, if Iran is already waving around the, hey, we're going to have a nuclear weapon soon card.
No.
so then what do we do? I mean, what do we? You can't really just send the whole nation to bed without dinner or something. I mean, you can't. I mean, it's just a way. I guess what I'm trying to ask is, what are we going to do exactly if they say, well, look, hey, look, we suddenly have a nuclear weapon, U.S., what are you going to do about it? And then they just sort of stare at us, you know?
Well, we believe that they are, you know, working toward getting a nuclear weapon. They've not necessarily proved that they've got enough or, you know, that kind of thing together. And, of course, there are experts who are a lot better at understanding this sort of thing than me. But we believe, you know, the way we want to go about this right now, in particular, is to have, you know, pressure the permanent members of the United Nations Security Council, and in particular Russia and China, to put big sanctions on Iran. And assuming that they, by August 31st, do not agree to open up their weapons program and stop this uranium enrichment. And they've already indicated that Iran, meaning, has already indicated it's willing to talk about it, but it's not willing to stop. And so the United States is fully expecting that on August 31st, they're going to have to go back to the Security Council and say, this is what they've, you know, what they were supposed to do. This is what they've not done. We need to, you know, further, put further sanctions on them, big sanctions. And it's unclear whether Russia and China will go along with that.
This is really going to have to end in us creating some sort of a death ray, isn't it? I mean, this is...
How do I respond to that?
I'm saying, like, if you're the only guy in the neighborhood that owns a knife, well, as long as nobody else figures out how to forge steel, you're fine.
Yeah.
As soon as everybody else gets an anvil in an oven, you're screwed, because then everybody has a knife, and then you get a gun, and then everybody else figures out where they can get a gun from. Eventually, we're going to have some huge Inspector Dreyfus in the Pink Panther Strikes Back-esque death ray that just hovers above the earth. I mean, really, there's or something that just that shoots tribbles or something. Isn't it? We're going to have no option here. That's just my journalistic perspective on this.
That's true. Every day so far this week, at least, the United States, and particularly Secretary Condoleezza Rice, has been contacting other nations, trying to get them on board with the idea of imposing stiff sanctions on Iran over this matter. Interestingly enough, I came across something else that we've been reporting out of Jerusalem. An Israeli newspaper on Friday said that Israel has picked a military leader to coordinate any future confrontation with Iran, and they have dubbed him orchestra conductor.
Ooh, that's kind of creepy.
Country. So, Israel is looking with a wary eye towards what Iran might be doing, that's for sure.
Well, it's job security for all of us, Bob. All right, my friend, enjoy your weekend. We will talk to you very soon.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Always a pleasure.
There you go. Bob Costantini, ladies and gentlemen, CNN radio correspondent. I know we got a break, but I feel like I should get at least one of these here. Let's see. Well, let's get Max, and then we'll get Paul here probably just around the corner. Max, hello, sir.
How you doing, sir?
What's up? You're on the Rick Emerson Show. How can I help
you?
Nothing.
I bought you a bunch of Vizo, dude.
Really?
Yes. I was at my secret stash, and I was like, Rick needs some Vizo. He's not been feeling well, and he's a nice guy and keeps me happy most of the day. So I bought you some Vizo, sir.
You missed all of us making the McRib is back.
Yeah, we're all drinking the... It's still good, but we're drinking the non-caffeinated Vizo because that's all we have.
That's
okay. I got you six of the caffeinated Vizo.
That's so great. You probably don't want to tell us because it's a secret stash.
It is a secret stash, but, you know, but I'll give you a hint. I bought CC Lemon there. That's the hint.
CC Lemon?
CC Lemon. It's a drink from Japan. It's delicious.
Sarah, do you have any idea where that might be?
Not a clue.
We don't have
sounds
like
some fancy. Like,
yeah, we don't have like a
or something.
Yeah, we don't have a beverages and more thing or anything like that here, do we?
It's out in Beaverton.
Okay. Well, see, yeah, none of us would ever see it anyway. It's no place that we would ever go. It's like, all right. Well, God bless you. God bless you. So,
yes.
At some point, the next time you happen to be our way, you drop that off.
I'll actually be there in like the next 15-20 minutes.
Yes.
Sarah's full on giving like the V for victory arms up. All right, we'll do it. And I'll tell you what, if we're in a break, we'll come out. We'll say hey. We'll give you the 2 cent tour here.
Oh, that'd be awesome. And
all
Rick,
right. Yes.
Remember this. England prevails.
Okay, there you go. Thank you. England prevails is the new I'm going to eat your soul. That's Max. Excellent. All right, we should take a break here. We come back.
So we can time him perfectly.
Yes. Not that we're addicts. We are. We come back. Paul says he knows how Sarah can pay bills easily. John is on hold somewhere just listening. Okay. Let's see. What else do we have? Jim Roop coming up later on. We have Scott Daly from FilmFeverRadio.com and 101 ways for you to save money from the City Desk. You stay there, it's Rick Emerson Show. Don't go anywhere. All right. I don't even know what CC Lemon is. Apparently, it's a place called... Should I even say the name? Since apparently it's a secret stash. Apparently, it's a place in Beaverton called... I swear to God, this is what it says. It's a place called... Uwa Jamaya.
Uwa Jamaya.
This is... I had like 15 different people send this to me. Does it ring any bells, Tim?
No. My bell's not ringing on that one.
All right. Japanese drink. And this one, Rick, come on. How can you not know? It's called Uwa Jamaya. It's a Japanese store in Beaverton.
Oh, I don't go to Beaverton very often.
Well, I'm just... Aren't those places...
The lights turn green on one car goes, and it turns red again, and you're sitting there for like 2 hours trying to go two blocks.
This is... yeah, it's a place called Uwa Jamaya. They sell all manner of tasty candy, apparently. So Asian stores are great, though. That's where I get the my ginger candy. And plus, we've talked about this before. When you go to an Asian store like that, it's just a total crapshoot because sometimes they're labeled in English, sometimes they're labeled, you know, in Asian. Sometimes it is some mixture of the two. Sometimes it's meat, sometimes it's cake, sometimes you can't quite tell. It's 503-733-2970. Ladies and gentlemen, here's Tim Riley.
So we're talking about this this booklet that was handed out to Northwest Airlines employees who are getting fired or laid off. And it is 101 ways to save money.
Now, did they give you this? If you were a Northwest Airlines employee, was this part of your exit interview?
Yes, I believe so.
Where you sat there with the HR woman who, you know, God damn, that's got to be the worst job on earth. I mean, I guess it could be argued that it beats being fired. I mean, having a job as the HR person, at least you have a job.
Right.
You know what's weird is when one HR person has to fire another. I wonder if that just, like, reverses if the whole universe just buckles or something. When one HR person has to just sit across the desk from her doppelganger. If that reduces all the atoms in the room to a singularity or something where that happens. I mean, I don't know if you all have it. Has anybody in this room ever had to fire anybody?
No, I've never been in charge of anybody.
Really?
Me either.
You'd have to be.
although I think every job I've had, I've often wished that I could fire people, but we're powerless to do so.
Would you like to share any examples?
No, that's okay. there are names we've all known.
Okay. Have you?
And the thing is, they've never gotten theirs. They've still never been fired.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Oh, okay. Well, let's talk about this.
Have you ever wished you had the power to hire someone? Perhaps someone who wants to do a weekend show. Perhaps someone who has
I don't want that power.
A gripping new idea for a radio talk show.
No.
That would be perfect for example this station.
No.
You're sure?
I'm positive.
I'll let you think about it for a second.
I already thought. Can't think of anybody.
Okay.
No, nothing out there.
No, but I'm trying to think if I've ever had to fire anybody. And I don't think so. I think I've had to fire one person in my life. I think that's about it. And boy, it sucked. And I think I've only ever had to fire one guy, and it was just the worst. It was the worst experience of my life. Not the worst. I imagine it was probably worse for him. But, I've told this story a long time ago, but when I worked in Salt Lake City, because all news stories must eventually revolve around me. When I worked in Salt Lake City, there was a guy, I was doing the afternoon show, this sort of Lycus slot, and there was a morning show host who had moved to Salt Lake City from Washington State and had this friend of his who he had worked with in Washington. And he's like, yeah, this guy, he's great. He'll make a great producer. He's funny. He's smart. He's got a great sense of humor. He knows how to find news stories. He's good with audio. He'll be the perfect morning show producer. He'll be fantastic. And I'm like, well, really? You sure? And he's like, no, he'll be great. And so I'm like, okay, we'll hire him. So I get this guy and I get this guy on the phone from Washington State. Great guy, cool guy, funny guy. One of those guys who, I'm not going to mention any names, but there's some people that we all probably know who don't really function well outside of radio. Radio is really the only thing they can do and be decent at. They have no skills nor personal interactive abilities to allow them to have any other job at all. And so this guy quits his job, packs up his whole life, da-da-da-da-da, and you can see this coming like a mile away, moves to Salt Lake City. He's there, and the general manager at the time just took some instant dislike to him. For no readily apparent reason, he like didn't like the guy's voice. He felt that the guy did not have a traditional sort of, you know, hello, you're listening to. He had a sort of a voice that was just a little thin. It was not a traditionally great radio voice, but talk radio isn't, you know, is less necessary in talk radio than in music radio. And the guy'd been there for 10 days, and the general manager's pulled me up. It's time to let that guy go. And I'm just like, But he quit. He packed up. He moved. He hadn't even paid his rent. He just said, let him go today. And so I totally had to pull the guy into the office. And there's no way to hide when a firing's coming. In fact, this is something we're now so paranoid about. That here in the store, like when we all talk about whenever anybody asks anybody into any other office for any kind of discussion, you automatically just assume it's a firing. And that way it's sort of, you know, it's like swinging two bats in the warm-up deck. That way, when it's not, you know, when it's not the case, then it turns out to be fine. But you're sitting there going, look, and let's talk about lies that you hear during the firing. How about this one? Have you ever been told this? Because I've been told this when I've been fired. They said, now look, we're letting you go, but now this isn't a reflection on you or your job, which of course is the biggest load. It's by definition, it is absolutely through the mathematical property of reflection. It is a reflection on you. It is absolutely a reflection on you. And then, so the woman is going to do this exit interview. And an exit interview, by the way, is just a thing where they try to calculate how likely you are to come back and kill everyone in the office. That's what an exit interview is. Is the employee liable to come back and just start shooting people in the face one by one? So this is at Northwest Airlines?
Northwest Airlines.
All right, so they give you the exit interview, they fire you, and then they hand you this form, which I urge you now to believe me on this, that we are not making this up. This is all real. This is a list of, we will not read all 101, but this is a list of 101 ways to save money that Northwest Airlines is giving their employees after they've been fired.
Mm-hmm. If your income is low, contact utilities about reduced rates, like they have those.
Can you only leave the power on in my house a few hours a day? Can you just turn off the power between the hours of noon and 8 p.m.? Just leave it on long enough that I can just watch soap operas and then cry myself to sleep.
Buy pre-owned toys and children's books at garage sales.
Oh. Why would you... Look. I'm sorry. I thought this was the wrong day to go through this list.
It is.
Because they're all just inexplicably hilarious to me. Here's the thing. I don't think people really need to be told that they might have to buy something used at a yard sale if suddenly they've been fired. You're not supposed to tell people as they're walking out the door, by the way, your children can no longer have nice things. So enjoy. Buy your children a pre-owned Snuffleupagus doll. Have fun. Thanks for working here. Bye.
Use old newspapers for cat litter.
Read about dates in the past when you had a life. Reminisce about the fond days of old when you were employed.
Make your own baby food.
Oh, God. Oh, all right.
Write letters instead of calling.
Just stand on the street corner. Strike up conversations with random people who don't know you.
Get hand-me-down clothes and toys for your kids from family and friends.
Because there's nothing that makes your life better when you're a child than getting some pair of shoes. It's like three sizes too big, and your mom going, well, just put newspaper. You'll grow into them. You never grow into clothing. That is the biggest lie. You know, Scotty is noting for toilet paper, use old newspapers. You never grow into clothing. There's many, many people who've had this, but I went through a period where my parents were unemployed and not a lot of money. And so, you know, you do stuff like this, and it's sometimes if your parents are good at it, they can sort of code it in a way. They can use code words, and they can sort of position things in a way that you don't really recognize until later what's happening. But, man, when you get hand-me-down clothing, which I did because I had a fat cousin. I had a fat cousin, same age as me, but he was a husky kid. He was large-boned, with large fat and meat around those bones. Lived in Vancouver, unsurprisingly. And so I got all of his clothing items. And here's the thing. At the age when you're going to be getting hand-me-down clothes, which is like, I don't know, 8, 9, 10, because once you get to be a teenager, a teenager's not wearing anything, it's hand-me-down. And when you're a baby, there's no point. It doesn't matter. So the age when you're getting hand-me-down clothing, which is like 9 through 12, you are never the same size long enough to grow into that clothing because you never grow in exactly the same way as the person who handed it down to you. And even if you do last, even if that clothing were to fit, by the year and a half mark that you've had that pair of pants, they will have been destroyed so long before. You will never, if you are subsisting solely on hand-me-down clothing, you will never, ever, ever have a pair of pants that fits you. Ever. You will probably go your entire life not knowing that there's clothing out there that fits you.
Move to a less expensive place to live.
St. John's. Let Tim Riley be your landlord.
I'm a very fine landlord. I just gave somebody a brand new water heater.
Sure you did.
She only had to ask once.
As far as they know.
Drop duplicate medical insurance.
Yes.
Like we have duplicate.
Drop duplicate medical insurance, because that's the problem with America, is that most families are overinsured. Most families here in this country, everybody's got insurance. You probably drop 3-4 of your redundant medical policies that you undoubtedly have in this country.
Take a date for a walk in the woods.
Then kill her and drink her blood instead of wine. Take a date for a walk in the woods?
That's what it says. Take a date for a walk in the woods.
Because that doesn't scream loser. I'd like to go to a movie. Let's not. Let's go look at a tree. Can I eat? No. Have a berry.
It's a little dark down here, but we'll make this quick. Volunteer 2 hours a month for reduced food through the food share program, and they list a phone number here to call.
It's a food share program.
I don't know.
Are you going to eat that? No.
If you volunteer at a food shelter, then you get to take some.
Oh, that's exactly what you want to. That's exactly. You know what it is?
These are all building public self-esteem for people.
This is exactly. And the end is just, is step 101, just buy a gun and end it. That work at a food share thing, you know what that is? That's like being that family on Christmas and Thanksgiving that they come and they bring you the food, you know what I mean? The church, hello, we'd like you to have this basket, which is great, and it's a wonderful thing that people of whatever denomination or faith are just good folks that they work to support each other. But goddamn, that's embarrassing. Opening the front door and there's some guy with a sack handing you like a, here you go, have some poultry, and it's just depressing. And they all, here's the thing, and they always time it to where there's company over at your house. Always, always. I don't know whether it's some sort of a plot, some sort of a keep them humble, sort of a scheme, but that always transpires right there when it's like your friend, guy next door, guy you work with, girl you have a crush on in high school. That's exactly when the door, let's see who that is. And you open it, it's like some people with a church bringing you a bunch of socks and some canned pineapple.
And last but not least, don't be shy about pulling something out of the garbage.
Use those coffee grounds 8 or 9 times. Oh, goddamn. Get your sustenance from bark. Okay. Kathy emails and says, I had to fire somebody a few weeks ago. She told me to go to hell. I probably will, Kathy says. Let's see. Hello, sir. How can I help you?
I wanted to express my appreciation that you're going through this list because I'm having a crappy day at work.
Yes.
And then you think, okay, well, what's worse than having a bad job? getting fired
yeah.
from a bad job.
Hosing out somebody else's old diapers to use on your baby. That's what's
yeah,
worse.
Yeah, because I've had this one for a long time, and so, you know, I try to make the best of it. But the last time I got fired, that's right, I remember. That's terrible.
Oh, no, it's, yeah, it's nothing but, and then you do this, like this thing, too, where you go to the supermarket, and your hand goes right for, like, the name goods, and then you stop and you reconsider.
The high talks and said,
yeah, and you go, yeah, that's exactly, and it's fun. Have you noticed this, how the Hydrox cookie is, that is the universal microcosm for this experience, is reaching for the Oreo, going for the Hydrox. I can't really think of any, when I was a kid, it was Cragmont, and Cragmont was the store brand. It was what Safeway Select is now. Cragmont was the Safeway store brand.
Western Family was the thrift
Western Family. Brother, when I was growing up, everything in my house had two labels. Everything in my house had two, well, or Cragmont. It either said Cragmont, it said Western Family. Like, there was no Kraft macaroni in my house. There was Western Family, which was like...
It's almost like Western Family is like made in the Dow Chemical Company. It has like a list of 200 chemicals on the box.
No actual food.
I grew up poor and Catholic in Vancouver. I'm 33, so yeah, a lot of similar experience.
Oh, God.
I gotta let you go, but I want to say really quickly, Tim Riley is the best. I mean, you know what, Rick? You've got a killer show. Sarah is really cool. You're a great host. Tim Riley's probably by and knows the best thing on the show, but it's almost time for the rest of the story, so I got to jam. Have a great weekend.
All right, thank you, sir.
I've got a terrible cocaine addict.
There you go. That's all right, thank you.
Well, thank you very much.
No, it's...
You need to smack Tim while he's having his moment in the sun.
No, it's... I'm saying no. the many moods of Tim Riley. There's so many flavors. No, Western Family, Cragmont, or just... which I don't think they have anymore. I know that we've talked about this with beer. But, I mean, in a generalized sense, I don't think they sell generic foodstuffs anymore. Do they, Tim Riley?
Oh, those old black and white labels?
Black on white.
I think they just became store brands.
Can we all agree that the word foodstuffs is great and should be used more often? Foodstuffs is a word that I quite like. And I don't hear it used enough in this world. But when I was a child, they sold generic food. Which was, like, if you couldn't, like, on those days when we couldn't quite afford the Western Family macaroni and cheese, my mom would just buy the generic. And it was literally, it looks like a parody of low-cost food, where it is literally a white, I mean, just like a pure ivory white box, and then in black stencil. It looks like prison food.
Soup.
I mean, exactly. Beer. And it was just a white can and just stenciled black letters that said beer. It really looked like stuff that you waited online for in, like, Lithuania or something. You know, where you're walking home and you see a line of people in the snow, and so you figure you'll just stand there because you can always use more splintery toilet paper. That's exactly what that food looked like. God damn. Yeah, Cocoa Poofs. Yes.
Oh, plenty and good.
Two Musketeers. I'm sorry, I gotta quit snorting. It's fantastic.
Meanwhile,
fruit rings. And it was that cereal that came in that goddamn bag the size of a thing of dog food. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
See, Sarah, and it's I'm not asking the reason why. It's none of my business, a personal choice or whatever, but I'm saying you only have the two kids, right? It's you and your sister? Not you have the two kids, but your parents?
Yes, my parents had two kids.
They're very Catholic, aren't they?
Mm-hmm.
So you did, for whatever reason, you did not have the huge...
Well, my mom didn't have me until she was 30.
Okay, so they started late.
Yeah.
So, I mean, yeah, so you didn't have the weird, like, eight kids and the shopping for a Catholic family or a Mormon family, man, where it's just buying just a huge industrial-sized everything. And when you're a kid, that cereal aisle is so magical when you're a child. Did you notice that they market cereals to kids? The whole idea makes you wretch when you're an adult. You know what I saw the other day was, and this is true, this is not a joke, was Fruit Loops with marshmallows. And I mean, that was my reaction too. You see the marshmallow Fruit Loops, you just kind of go, and it sort of makes your teeth itch.
No, two tastes that won't taste good together.
Exactly. But when you're a kid, nothing is too sweet. When you are a kid, it could just be lumps of sugar covered with honey.
Do you remember the Reese's Pieces cereal?
I don't.
Do they still have that?
Oh, well, I remember Reese's cereal. Yeah, and it was like puffed. It was
puffed with like thick chocolate powder and peanut butter?
It was like Trix, but it tasted like peanut butter.
It was horrible for you. It was so good.
It was pretty good, actually. I was a big fan of that. But and that cereal aisle when you're a kid, and of course they do this, you find out later in marketing, of course, that they put all the cereal right there at kid eye level. It's right about 3 feet off the ground. And so, you know, your dad would be reaching, and you see it all in slow motion, bionic style, as your dad's reaching for the food. And you think, oh, this is it. I'm gonna get the Cap'n Crunch. I'm gonna get Cookie Crisp. But no! You know, and then he either reaches for the cornflakes, which have no taste of any kind. There is no let's talk about, we've talked about best cereals before, and probably every hack DJ on earth has had the whole, what was your favorite cereal when you were a child? Which is fine. We've totally done that topic. Undoubtedly. I don't remember it, but I'm sure we have. Let's talk for a second, and just for a second here, about terrible cereals that you didn't want your parents to buy because you knew that they were because your parents have in their head when they're shopping X number of slots for things they're going to buy. You know, your mom's like, well, I'm going to buy a case of soda at the store. I'm going to buy 2 boxes of cereal at the store. I'm going to buy whatever. I'm going to buy 5 rolls of toilet paper. Your parents have got it all segmented out in their head, typically, about what they're going to buy. And so we'd go shopping, and my mom would buy 2 boxes of cereal. And so when she reaches out and one of those boxes of cereal is Grape Nuts, it is your whole world starts coming apart because you know that you've only got one shot left. And you know the next one is going to be Special K, which no one wants.
Oh, I love Special K.
And that's only because you're a girl and you've been marketed to.
No, it's not. I really like the taste of it. I've eaten it since I was young, yeah.
Special K.
But I had the same Grape Nuts. I think it was because I had the choice between Grape Nuts and Special K. And so I love that.
Grape Nuts? Grape Nuts. Really?
Oh, yeah.
He's a doctor, though. So
yeah.
He's... Grape Nuts, which contain neither grapes nor nuts. I mean, what the hell is that about? Someone tell me. And then it turns into cement. You know, like, because here's the thing. You would pour the Grape Nuts, and then I realize that some people may feel I'm having a disproportionate response to this whole cereal thing, but there's stuff that scars us young. And so you would pour the Grape Nuts if there was nothing left, and then what would happen? The phone would ring, and you're looking at your cereal, and you're thinking, I'm going to get back here, and this cereal is going to be ruined. There is no pause button for cereal. It starts half-lifing away the minute you put milk in there. Phone rings. You're like, man, crap. You get up and he answers. Hello? And have you ever done this? Have you ever set out a food or like a cup of coffee that's getting cooler or, in this case, cereal? And you're on the phone and you're actually sometimes looking over at the food, like kind of up on your tiptoes, like looking at the cereal, and you can sense the cereal going bad while you're on the phone. And it's always some guy going,
I have here an irregularity in your water bill. It seems that you haven't paid, Miss Dillon, your water bill in about 7 months, and so we're going to begin turning up. And you're like, it seems to be, can I call you? Can I just go? And then by the time you get off the phone, you go back over there, and the Grape Nuts have congealed into this weird grout-like substance.
It's some sort of caulk-like substance at the bottom of a bowl. And it's a cereal that but of course there's no middle ground there because Grape Nuts, when you just pour them into the bowl, are so hard that they break your teeth. There's like a 30-second window with Grape Nuts where they're good. And then they go from being inedible because they're like rocks to just being something you wouldn't want to eat because it's just like you're eating some sort of sludge. I'm sorry.
Did you ask a question?
Where did we even start talking about cereal?
I don't know. But it doesn't matter. You know why? Because Max is here with the Viso.
I think we should break.
McRib is back. Hey, look at this. We get back. Here's what we're going to do. We got John talking about cereal. Steve, who I believe is talking about cereal.
Everyone can talk about cereal. And we have talked about cereal before, I know.
You know why, Sarah?
Because it's relatable.
Because it's relatable.
Yes. It's something that needs to be discussed.
In your face. Nothing.
After we have this fantastic double penis watch and everything, we have to talk about cereal on a Friday?
No, we'll talk about cereal first. We'll talk about cereal first. That Doug and Skippy show doesn't do itself. All right. It's 503-733-2970. You stay there. We'll be back after this. Don't forget, Scott Dowley's coming up later on with a Beer Fest review. And we'll talk to CNN radio correspondent James Roop. Make way for Twisted Sister. It's a Rick Emerson show. Don't go anywhere.